Hey, yo, and here we go. Another episode of We Talk Music is on the air and in your ear. And once again, I got Brett with me, and everybody knows me as Mo. So, Brett, you're the king of the casters. You're Mr. Brett Podcast. Damn it. Introduce our guest. Get going. What is taking you so long?
Well, you know, it's because you won't shut up. But no, ultimately, we love to talk about rock and roll music. We love to talk about fastest land animals in this case. So we have
you.
Screaming Jack Novak from Fastest Land Animal.
I am, Brett.
Screaming, how are you?
I'm screaming and I'm Jack and here I am. And I'm talking about rock and roll with Brett and Mo. That rhymes. Look at that. I'm writing lyrics and I didn't even know I was.
All right. Well, you can pick up one of your guitars and you can just start playing a song.
I'm looking forward to the song Brett and Mo.
Yeah.
On your next album.
Brett and Mo. Wait. That's out of tune. I gotta do something.
So are we. So it's okay. So you've got a new album, East Coast, West Coast, In Between. And it's a whole lot of fun. So why don't you tell us about how it came to be?
Well, it was sort of got springboarded off of the first album we did together as a band. We were this was like going back to 2020, around March, April of 2020, and as we all know on planet Earth, we were trapped in our houses. We were grounded. We weren't allowed to go outside. We certainly couldn't play gigs because there were no gigs to be had. So I had this brilliant idea that we could record an album with some buddies of mine from a prior band that I had. And we all had our little home studios and we could connect the dots using the computer and communicating over, you know, things like Zoom or whatever. But we could record an album in our home studios, completely separated. And we were actually separated. I'm an East Coast guy. Our drummer lives in Houston, Texas. Excuse me. And our guitar bass player and our producer, they're out in the West Coast. So I figured we got nothing else to do. Let's make an album, record it. We'll glue it all together at the end. And we did that. And it was actually a really fun process for us because normally we would record, we go into a studio. Excuse me. I'm so excited that I'm choking myself. We would, you know, normally you go to a recording studio, you lock down like 6 weeks or whatever, and you're there and you record the whole album. But this gave us an opportunity to be at home, live our lives, and then like we would record and discuss what we're doing, and then the next day we get back together and discuss what we did. And it was really a kind of a fun process. So we did that. We recorded the first album, Fastest Land Animal. And then we couldn't really tour or anything. But then the world started opening up. So then we were able to go out and we started touring off of that record. And then I had a whole bunch of songs in the hopper and that I was writing. And so we did another album. And at this point, we weren't on lockdown, but we were all over the country. We were East Coast, West Coast, and In Between, hence the name of the album. And then we just did another album like that, and now we're about to go out on the road and tour that album. So it's kind of a different way of doing an album. I'm not saying it's perfect, but it kind of works for us. It's fun to be able to record now two of us all from home.
Mm-hmm.
If you're all East Coast, West Coast, and in between, gotta be a blast though then when you all get together and it is time to tour and it's time to jam and it's time to do it like that.
Absolutely.
You know, that's gotta be the best.
It is. In fact, we're getting the day after tomorrow, we shall be all together on the East Coast in New York City, and we're going to be rehearsing to start doing pre-production for all the gigs we have coming up starting in April. So I'm going to get to see these guys finally in person. And, you know, magic happens when you get together in person. And it's been a while. And I love these guys. We've been together for, you know, years. And we kind of just, we like, I'll, in the middle of a gig, when we're playing a gig, the most important thing is to play live as many times as you possibly can, so you don't have to think about what you're doing. I don't want to think about what the lyrics are. I don't want to think about what I'm going to sing. I just want to think about the crowd and doing, reacting to what they're doing. And just, I want to look at the other guys in the band and they just look at me and we know what the next thing's going to be. That, you know, it's like you have to have it, you have to have the songs be muscle memory in your brain. You can't think. I think Keith Richards once said, someone asked him, an interviewer said, Keith Richards, what do you think about when you're playing? He goes, I don't think, I just feel. And that's critical. You can't think, you got to feel when you're playing a live gig. And that's what it's, when it comes to rock and roll, that's what it's all about, the live gig. I mean, I love the recording process. I love doing it. I love, you know, writing songs and capturing that magic. But really, there's nothing like playing in front of a crowd, getting that immediate feedback. You know what works, you know what doesn't. You can kind of change things up on the fly. That's, and that's really what rock and roll is all about, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, if you can't think, I'm ahead of the game. I should be the best musician ever.
It is true. It is true. You should, you know, live, you would be amazing.
Great. The studio, not so much.
Yeah, that's right.
But, you know, I mean, it is, you know, is there, do you have that, like that philosophy of rock and roll? Like, this is what rock and roll is. You have like a rock and roll philosophy, or is it just, is it all, you know, feel and the moment?
I think it's a little bit of all of that. The reason why, you know, we started Fastest Land Animal, my prior band was a band called The Cringe, which is more of a, if I had to pigeonhole it, it would be maybe like a classic rock meets grunge kind of thing. and I wanted to do, when COVID happened and we were trapped, I said, let's not only do a new album, let's have a new band. And I loved the name Fastest Land Animal. I had it in my hip pocket for years. And then I, you know, we were just stuck with The Cringe. Quite frankly, I hate that name, The Cringe. But I loved the name Fastest Land Animal, and no other band had used that name. So, I thought it would be really cool to come up with characters. So we're not only starting a new band called Fastest Land Animal, we're gonna make up all new names and characters for the band. So I became, instead of my name, John Cusimano, I became Screaming Jack Novak. And there was rules to Fastest Land Animal. One rule was the songs have to be fast because it's called Fastest Land Animal. So it was like every song had to be at least 150 beats per minute. And it was more of like a punk thing. And the reason why I love punk rock so much is because before punk rock, there was the band, they were on the stage, they were like this unattainable thing, and there was the fans, and the fans were looking at the band and really like aspiring to be them, but they couldn't be them. Then punk rock happened, and punk rock was all about the band and the fans are one and the same. They're interchangeable. Some nights the band is on stage and fans are in the crowd. The other night, or maybe later that same night, those same fans are there in the band now, and the band that was on the stage are in the crowd. And I really love that idea of rock and roll being this inclusive thing that anyone can do, and you don't have to be a master of your craft. You don't have to be Eddie Van Halen on guitar, as much as I love and respect him, or or like, you know, some really skilled drummer. If you can write a good catchy song like the Ramones did over and over again, and Husker Du did masterfully, and then you can paste it all together with your buddies in a garage and present it to your friends. And that's really what rock and roll is all about to me. Is
three chords and the truth, right?
Absolutely. When I was a little tiny kid, I was 6 years old, and I had been taking, I trained on classical piano my whole life. I never took one day of guitar lessons, but my dad, who could play guitar, he was a big Bob Dylan fan. He handed me a guitar and he says, "These are three chords." He taught me three chords. And he said, "With those three chords, you can play 1,000 songs." And that's where I, you know, that's just where I launched off from there. And that's really what it's all about.
So then when it comes down to your writing process, like, are you the primary songwriter for the band? And then do you kind of, and how often do you write? Like, do you kind of find yourself like composing a song every 5 minutes kind of thing?
Yeah, so I am the primary songwriter in the band. I am part of there's this thing called the song game. It was started 18 years ago or so by a good friend of mine. His name's Bob Schneider. He's a Austin, Texas based singer-songwriter, really talented guy, and he has this thing, and there's maybe 18 of us in this group. It's an email chain, and every week he'll send out a word or a phrase, and he'll say, by Tuesday's the deadline, you have to write and record a song incorporating that phrase or that word. And then you do that, and it could be you in a bathroom singing into your phone. It can be you in a home studio recording it. You can do it with a band. It doesn't matter. All that matters is that every week, write and record a song, and you send it to the other 18 or however 20 of us singer-songwriters in the email chain. And we don't comment back. We don't, like, grade each other. It's not about that. It's just exercising that songwriting muscle, which, just like any other muscle, you the more you use it, the better you get at it. And the more you write songs, the easier it comes to you. And then at the end of the week, you have a song. You know that other people that you respect and you love their music are going to hear it. They're not going to comment on you, so you don't have to worry about being judged. But at the end of the year, you now have 52 things you've written. You know, some of them are going to be great. Some of them are going to stink. Some of them will be like kind of halfway between. But at the end of a year, you have probably the makings of an album. Like, you have 8 to 12 songs. So that's where all my music comes from, because I'm always writing every week. You know, I just finished a song 5 minutes ago. I've got another one coming up. But what I did with Fastest Land Animal when I decided we were going to do this project is I dialed it in that, okay, I'm going to make sure every song's fast, every song's kind of aggressive, every song's rocking. Whereas, you know, I could decide to, or anyone, you know, can do something a little more chill, a little more mellow. But, you know, you have a pile of songs that you can make an album from. That's the that's what the whole song game's about, and it's really helpful for me in my process.
It's interesting because we talk to literally hundreds of musicians on the We Talk Music podcast, and we talk so much about songwriting. And while there's a few that talk about the craft of songwriting or the science behind it, most of them tell us, and I mean a vast majority of them tell us, it's like the song already exists, and I'm just lucky enough to have an antenna that reaches out there and grabs it.
That's 100%. I completely agree with that. Like, it is like a muscle you have to exercise, but yeah, there's something elusive about songwriting that it's kind of out there, and it's like going fishing. You just have to capture it, and then it's yours. And then you get to craft, like, it could be a little hook, a little lyric phrase, a little chorus thing, but you have to just keep, like, you know, I'll sit here with a guitar and just, you know, like, here's a guitar. This is my songwriting process. I'll, you know, do this, and then I'll, like, maybe play a little, I don't know, that sounds horrible. But then I'll keep doing that over and over again, and then I'll change the tuning. Maybe that tuning's not working for me. And then you keep doing that over and over again, and then something snaps, and you have a little bit of a hook that you can build a song around. And that's how it all starts. And you know, lyrically, I'll just typically my process is I'll play a guitar or a piano or whatever, and just wait to catch that fish and hear that like phrase or that melodic hook. Then I'll start singing phonetically around it. Like, I'll just make up words like blah, 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 blah. But then out of that will emerge a phrase or a hook or a word. And then I build out, you know, from the inside out from there.
Well, and then one
Does
of
that
the things.
Make any sense at all? I sound like.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, not at all. I mean, because one of the interesting things, right, is with your album, there's so many different kinds of songs. So I think that's what this speaks to is that when you go in there and it's just kind of like, this is what's here at the moment. This is what's here at the moment. And it gives you the opportunity to do a lot of variety.
Yeah. I mean, we try, you know, I try and keep the songs like in the punk. This album's a little more new wavy punk than the first album. First album was like pretty punk rock. This one, we incorporated a lot of synthesizers. I don't know if people can see, but behind me, these are analog synths. And there's a lot of keyboards out there that you can play that are contained within your computer. And you can have an endless supply chain of every sound on planet Earth, and you play it on a keyboard, it's in your computer, and then you can tune it, you can fix the tempo and make it perfect. But we use a lot of analog synths on this album, which you can't, it's not perfect. It's, you're playing something live. You can't really fix it like you would with a digital synth. The sound is being created by these oscillators, and you can tune them and detune them. And then you have all these filters and all these levers and all these different things. And you can create a sound that has never existed on planet Earth. And then you're off to the races. And that's, I mean, to me, that's really the beauty of music, doing something that's a little dangerous, a little risky, and it's not so perfect. Music shouldn't be so perfect, I don't think.
No, I agree. And you know, that's the punk rock attitude too, right? Music shouldn't be so perfect, because it's, you know, I mean, I was listening to the album a few times now. And I mean, it doesn't have, like, the punk rock element is obviously there, but I mean, it's like, I can maybe think of one band that I think sort of sounds like you guys, like, you know, like maybe one. It's different. And so I'm like, it's got to be a bitch when they're trying to put a tour together to get you with the right band, the right sound to fit with you.
Yeah, well, we're lucky that we're, I mean, we've toured in the past with the Cringe, different kind of sound, but we toured with Motley Crue and Alice Cooper for like, you know, a year and a half all over North America, playing arena shows and stadium shows. And that was, couldn't have been more fun. But we're good buds with, not to be confused with the car, the band Tesla. And we were, before pandemic, before Fastest Land Animal, we were touring with Tesla as the Cringe. And we were playing great venues, like, I don't know, 2,000-3,000 capacity venues. And we became really tight and close with all the guys in the band, and all their crew, and all the crowd, frankly. We, like, you know, we would go back around the bend and play the same venues and, you know, see the same people in the crowd, and we felt like they were our family and we were their family. And then pandemic happened, and then we started this new thing, Fastest Land Animal, and we had these names, and so no one knew who we were. And then we went back on the road again with Tesla, and people were in the crowd, they're like, I think I know those guys. Is that the Cringe guy? Is that... And it was just like a homecoming. We're lucky to have met the guys in Tesla. Their crowds seem to like what we're doing, and we're a good fit with them.
You are a good fit with them. They got modern day cowboy. You got cowboys in Nashville right there.
Oh, that's cowboys.
It's all about the cowboys right there.
That's right. You know, and that is a great song, too. I mean, that is one of my favorites on the album, because I love the sound of that one.
That's so good.
That song, technically, that took me 15 years or something to write that song. So we were almost done with the album. And, you know, I love the idea of having an album. I know you can release music one track at a time. It doesn't matter. But I love, you know, I love vinyl. I love an LP. And I think the perfect package for rock and pop music is this 40 to 45 minute thing. It's got, you know, 20 minutes on each side. It has artwork, liner notes, maybe lyrics. And you can immerse yourself in the world of that album. So we were... You know, we were almost done with East Coast, West Coast, In Between, but we needed like one more song to make it an LP length album. And I had this song kicking around for like a decade before called Cowboys in Nashville. And, you know, it was like half written. It was like a maybe 50 second long song. And I played it for the guys in the band and our producer, Don Gilmore. And they heard it and they're like, absolutely, that's totally a Fastest Land Animal song. So then I had, you know, I had to write all the lyrics and double up on the lyrics. We made the choruses twice as long. We had to write a little bridge part. But I guess at the end of the day, that was the longest it ever took me to write a song. But I do love that I do this thing on that album where the vocals are really distorted, really crunchy, like almost like a megaphone sounding thing. In fact, when we play that song live, I use megaphone. And I love that idea. It's just so aggressive. But then you can take this aggressive package, and within that aggressive, gnarly sounding package, you try and put like a pretty, you know, hooky sounding pop song. So that's kind of the idea with that.
So then let's talk about the production, because I mean it's really good, and Don Gilmore does a great job. Like, how important is Don Gilmore to Fastest Land Animal?
I mean, he's the director of the movie. Without him, we would probably still be making the first album. because we wouldn't know when to stop or what to do or what choices to make. He's really good at, you know, arranging this. Like, I'll bring a whole bunch of demos to him, and he will cut them up, rearrange them, and say, how does this sound? I think this is how the song should be arranged. And then he'll work really closely with me on, he's not writing lyrics, but he's saying, the lyrics aren't there yet. Keep going. Maybe this is a good direction that you were thinking about, head in that direction. And then specifically for me, because when I work with him, mostly I work with him on my lead vocals. And we did all the lead vocals on this album in like 6 days. We're doing 2-3 songs a day. And I really have, especially since I'm working from my studio here in New York. He's out on the West Coast. And we're communicating over the internet, but he has a way of knowing what just how hard to push you, and push you in a gentle way. He'll say, that's good, let's try it again, maybe you can beat that. And then you know, after a few takes, not too many takes, but just enough, he'll know when he has what he needs to be able to craft a song around that. So, yeah, I love working with the guy. I can't say enough good things about Don. And he's also a good buddy of mine. And he's a hell of a golfer, too, which is
cool. Well, I mean, especially if you're going to be anywhere, you know, hanging out by Alice Cooper, then you have to be a good golfer.
Oh, right? My God. So Alice plays golf 6 days a week. I mean, when we were touring with those guys, he has tour bus. And on the back of the tour bus, he had a Jeep Grand Cherokee, and wherever we would be playing, he would get in that Jeep, drive himself to the nearest golf course, and play a round of golf every 6 days a week. I think he's a scratch golfer, and he's oh my God, I love Alice. He's just the best. He's just the sweetest, most professional. Everyone in his band, they kind of you know, we didn't know what the fuck we were doing. We were going out on tour with Motley Crue and Alice Cooper. We were a bunch of chooches. And Alice and his band, Tommy Hendrickson, his musical director, and his one of his guitarists, and Bougie, his tour manager, they all immediately took us under their wings and made us feel welcome and made us, you know, It's intimidating. You're playing with Alice Cooper and Motley Crue, you know, in front of 18,000 people a night, and you don't know what you're doing. And they couldn't have been sweeter. And you know, still am good friends with all those guys and gals in that band.
So then, what kind of thing do you learn from these people who are so good at their craft that you take with you as you keep moving forward?
You got to play to the bleachers. You got to play to the back of the house. Like I said, you got to become Oprah. And first of all, you got to know what city you're in. if there's nothing else on stage, you know, I like to have a set list on stage. But the most important thing to have in front of you on stage is the name of the town you're playing in. If you get that wrong, you're done, buddy. Just go home, hang up your jock strap. You're going to get booed off stage. You got to know where you're playing. And I try, you know, you want to learn a little bit about where you're playing and the town you're playing in, but you got to just like shoot for the fences and put on your big voice and say, you know, Chicago, we love you. And then it helps if you're the support act, name the name of the band that you're supporting. So like if we're playing for Motley Crue, are you guys excited to see Motley fucking Crue? And then they'll go nuts. And it also helps if you close the set with a cover that you think people might know and they'll have a lot of fun with. So you go out on a high and just just, you know, it's rock. So you gotta, it's a workout. You gotta be sweaty and jumping around and just being physical. I mean, that's it. You gotta get that going in.
So I'm guessing it isn't the police you covered. What did you cover?
You did cover the police, not with Motley Crue.
No, not with Motley Crue, no. With
Motley Crue, we would often do Jailbreak.
Mm. Oh, nice.
Jailbreak. Why am I blanking on the name of the band?
AC/DC.
No.
Oh,
not
oh the Thin Lizzy.
Thin Lizzy, yeah.
Thin Lizzy. Thank you very much. Yeah, we would do Jailbreak by Thin Lizzy.
Oh, I love but, that song.
Yeah, we can play the hell out of that song. But with this band, we had never actually recorded on an album a cover. We play covers occasionally when we're out playing live, but we never recorded one. But we decided, you know, the first two Beatles albums, half of the album of the albums were covers. David Bowie would often do a cover on all of his albums. So we weren't, we thought we could do that. But then we had to find the right cover song. I didn't want to do something that was so on the nose and so obvious that everyone's like, yeah, it's a bar band, they're doing a cover, whatever. So I figured let's do a cover song of a band that people probably know, but they maybe don't necessarily know this particular song. So we can kind of not fool them, but like maybe if someone hears it for the first time, they'll be like, oh, that's a good song. And we'll put our own spin on it. And we can kind of own that song. So we went through a lot of iterations of different songs. I want to do a Stooges cover, wanted to do a Misfits cover. Our Husker Du cover. I love Husker Du. But then Alphonse, our bass and guitar player, said, why don't we do Next to You by the Police? It's the first song on their first album. It definitely can fit in the Fastest Land Animal thing because it's fast, it's punky. It's also really, really cleverly written song and really catchy and hooky. And not that, you know, it's not an obvious, it's not like Roxanne or something. Like maybe people don't know that song so well. So that was it. That's what we did. And that's now on the album. And we play it live, you know, every night.
Do you think then that that going forward, you would consider putting like a cover song on each album?
Maybe. Yeah, it's possible. I like the idea of playing covers, and I like the idea of playing not obscure, but like just not so obvious covers. Mm-hmm. Cause that's a lot of fun. Cause then, you know, there's like, you take a song like Hallelujah by Leonard Cohen. Jeff Buckley did it and he owns that song now. That's like his song. So, you know, to be able to do that is really, that's the challenge and the fun part of it.
Yeah, because there's a lot of artists now that are doing covers albums, like a lot, like full albums. And so I do find it quite interesting. And it's great, too, for the fans, I think, because they get a chance to hear songs that they know and love, but just, you know, with a different take and a different voice. Because certainly, I mean, you know, if I really enjoy your voice, which I do, and then, you know, I get the chance to hear you sing another awesome song that I love, it's really cool.
Yeah, I mean, playing covers is just, it's just fun. And then, you know, putting your own spin on it is fun. We did this, we put the original version of Next to You was guitar, bass, drums. When the Police did it, we added in a lot of, like I spoke of before, these analog synths. And there's a guitar solo in the song. And we replaced that with me playing a keyboard solo on an analog synth, in fact, the synth that's just behind me, to my right, your left. It's a Moog analog synth. And the way I had to do the solo was you can only play one note at a time on this particular synth patch. So I had to play one part, like call it the melody. And then I wanted to do a harmony over that. So then I had to play along with myself over that. But because it was analog, I couldn't just like play it and then and like fix it later. I just did it basically did it live. I did a whole bunch of takes, and then we picked like the two best takes, and that's what we used.
How do you recreate that live?
We have, so there's three of us in the band on the record. When we play live, there's five of us. We schlep out two other guitar players with us. One of the guitar players knows how to play keyboards, so he plays the solo live on stage. So that's how we do it. We need to just bring more people with us to recreate our songs.
They're just like the faster land animals, not they're quite the fastest
land. It's Danny and Tommy. Love those guys. We have a lot of fun touring with them, and they kind of, we, you know, it's hard to do what we do with just the three of us. What we do on an album, we need the two of them to help fill in the blanks. There's just a lot of parts going on.
You know, there's some bands that are three piece bands, and I see them live, and I go, I can't believe that sounds like 50 people, you know?
Yeah,
it's amazing. Some of these guys. Do you, when you have a song, how do you know it has the fastest land animals personality?
Well, it has to be fast. So, like the first threshold would be, is it 150 beats per minute, which, you know, that's like the tempo. So the first album was everything was at least 150 beats per minute or faster. The second album, we did dial it back on, I think two songs are like 130, which is still pretty fast. But that was sort of like the threshold question. And then the next thing was, it's got to be, got to have a punk rock attitude. And I want it to be catchy and hooky and, you know, something that, like, you'll hear it. It's an earworm. You sing it right away. So those are really, like, you know, I'm thinking about bands like The Clash, again, Husker Du, The Ramones. Like, if I can do with half of what, or, you know, even like even later, like Eagles of Death Metal, Queens of the Stone Age, if I can do half of what any of those bands are doing, that's a good bar to set.
It's funny, Eagles of Death Metal is the one band I thought sort of sounds like you guys. That was the band I was referencing.
Well, when we came out with our first album, when we didn't let anyone know who we were, there was a lot of chatter on the internet, like, are those the Eagles of Death Metal guys? And we were having so much fun with it. But then we did an interview on Howard Stern's wrap-up show with my friend Gary Del Bate.
Oh, so I'm a monkey.
Yeah. So we had to we disclosed who we were then, and then the cat was out of the bag, and that was that.
Oh, Gary Del Bate. How now you? Now I could talk about the Howard Stern show for about another hour and a half, 2 hours.
I'm a huge fan.
Yeah.
Every morning.
What about your voice, though? I mean, you have the different pitches, your different tones. How do you know when you're going to do what?
That's another thing that we did differently from prior bands was I did a lot of singing in, it's called falsetto. So they call it head voice or chest voice. So think of chest voice is like when you go, ah, and then falsetto or head voice is like, ah. So I did a lot of songs with that high sounding falsetto thing. Again, a lot of that had to do with Eagles of Death Metal, because they do that all the time. But I think there's a really, if you can do that, and it's hard to do because you can't really project live so easily when you're singing like this. But I love the idea that this is really loud, aggressive song and this sweet voice singing it. The dichotomy was kind of interesting to me. So, I mean, as far as like when I'm on tour, I am doing vocal exercises every day. You know, I'm not, you know, it's not like the life of a rock star. I'll do the gig, maybe go grab dinner or something, go to bed. But I'm really like conscientious and like kind of neurotic about my voice. Yeah, that's the most important thing. Cause if I'm, you know, there's some songs where I'm singing that sweet little voice. And then there's other songs like Cowboys in Nashville where I'm screaming my head off. And if I don't do it right and we're in the middle of a tour, if I lose my voice, game over. So I have to really be very careful about protecting this.
When you design your set list, do you kind of have to check which songs go after one another so that you're not going from falsetto to Cowboys in Nashville?
I make sure that the like Cowboys in Nashville is a little later in the set because that's a real scorcher. So I don't want to put that early on in the set. So yes, indeed, I do that. But you know, when you're out on the road, it doesn't matter. You're doing like three nights in a row, the set, over and over again. So you just got to pace yourself. But yeah, I am, conscientious about that for sure.
So then how long are your sets right now?
I mean, right now, like when we tour with Tesla, we're doing like half hour sets, which is kind of perfect for us. And we're direct support for them when we've been touring with them. So when we get on stage, the venues are packed. Butts are in seats and we're playing to a full house. And it's great. We, everyone's engaged. We're all having a great time. Then we get to go off stage and watch a Tesla show for free.
So then what do you think of you talk about singing for 30 minutes like that. Well, I mean, like what do you think of when a guy like Bruce Springsteen goes out there and sings for 3 hours?
I mean, I've done that. I've done 2.5 hour gigs and, Springsteen's a force of nature. I don't know how he does it, man. The guy's in his 70s or something.
Yeah. 73. Yeah.
Yeah, he's just got it. But when once you're in it and Mick Jagger does the same thing. And like, once you're in it and you're doing it, it's good. It's all good. You get in this like vibe and this system where, time doesn't really matter. What just matters is making the crowd happy.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and I mean, and in this case, I mean, when you talk about like the sweat and all of that, I mean, it sounds like the show that you're putting on is exactly what's going to make a crowd happy.
Yeah, I mean, if I know I'm doing a half hour show, I know I can pace myself. If I know I'm doing a 2.5 hour show, I know I can pace myself for that. And, maybe if we're doing a 2.5 hour show, we can put in some slower songs. We can kind of play with mood. And, it's like you're directing a movie and it has ebbs and flows. If you're doing a half hour set and you're the opening band, you just want to come out guns a-blazing, swinging for the fences. And it's just like, for a half hour.
Yeah, for sure. Well, John, it's been awesome to have you on the show. I know we super appreciate it.
And, I got one last question.
Okay, then I'm ask
away. One last answer.
All right, I'm just wondering, could you throw a better pitch before a Mets game than Gary did?
Well, I'm a Yankee fan, so I wouldn't throw a game ball for a Met game necessarily. But my wife actually threw a game ball out for, and it kills me to say this, she's a Red Sox fan. Ooh. And being a Yankee fan, I very much do not like that she's a Red Sox fan. But years, like maybe 12 years ago, she threw out a game ball at Fenway. I was there, and it was amazing. She did a great job, and she got it right over the plate.
There you go. Hey, you know what? If there's a hope for red and blue America after all. If the Red Sox fan and a Yankee fan can come together. If Red Sox
fans and Yankee fans can live together in matrimonial harmony, anything's possible.
Anything's. It warms my soul. Warms my soul. Well, if you ever get up, we're actually up in Canada. We're in Calgary, Alberta, Canada.
So you ever get up to Calgary? I played there with Motley Crue.
Oh, perfect. You next time you get up, say Calgary instead of Calgary.
Calgary.
Yep,
there you go.
Instead of Calgary. You get that right. I promise you great love from this city forever.
We love Canada. We've playing there. You know, where I'm in my upstate house right now. We're about 2.5 hours, not even, from Montreal. So we love Canada. What a great country. And it's like Europe and the Midwest and then the West Coast all combined into one. It's amazing.
It's like East Coast, West Coast in between.
That's what I'm saying.
Your great album. I hope everybody goes and listens to it.
Absolutely. Well, John, please tell everybody where they can find the album and how they can keep up with you.
Well, our website is fastestlandanimal.band. But if you just type in fastest land animal, but you got to type in the band part, otherwise you'll just get a bunch of pictures of cheetahs. But if you type in fastest land animal and band, you'll find us. And we're on all the streaming services, both of our albums, they're all available. We're coming to a town near you soon.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. We appreciated it. And love the album, and we wish you nothing but the best in the future, and we look forward to talking to you again.
Peace, guys.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much. Bye for now.
Bye.